From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Today, we're bringing you the latest chapter in a story we started telling you about a year and a half ago. It's about Jesuit priests who, for decades, abused young people in Alaska Native villages and on Indian reservations in the Pacific Northwest. The Jesuits are an order of the Catholic Church, and in our original story, we told you about a survivor, Elsie Boudreau. She was one of the first Alaska Native women to speak publicly about her abuse nearly 20 years ago.
We were like the sheep, and they're the shepherd, and they're not responding to their flock in a responsible way. I became like a liability to them.
And we learned about Elsie's abuser, a Jesuit priest named James Poole, who was deposed as a part of a lawsuit in 2005.
I thought I was bringing love into the life of other persons.
By engaging in sexual acts with them?
By being intimate.
And what's your definition of intimacy?
Everything short of intercourse.
James Poole was one of about 100 abusive Jesuits we found, but none were ever prosecuted. Instead, Jesuit leadership moved them around to isolated Native communities before sending some of them to retire on the campus of a Jesuit university, Gonzaga, in Spokane, Washington. Joining me now is reporter Emily Schwing. And Emily, how did Gonzaga respond to your original story?
Well, Gonzaga's president, Thane McCullough, said in a statement that it was the Jesuit order and not the university that made decisions about who lived in the retirement home. It's unclear from that statement when he learned the priests were there. And then in April 2019, President McCullough announced the formation of a commission to identify, discuss, and make recommendations for formal actions on behalf of Gonzaga in response to the clergy abuse crisis.
And what has a commission done?
Well, that's really hard to say, Al. Over the past year, I've called and emailed several times to find out more, but I've never gotten a clear answer. So I started digging through a long list of accused Jesuits we compiled with help from a website called Bishop Accountability. It keeps track of credibly accused priests. I wanted to find out if there were priests who were connected to Gonzaga who had not simply retired there. I noticed that among all 27 Jesuit universities in the nation, Gonzaga has the highest number of predatory priests who worked as staff and faculty there.
And today you have two stories for us about priests who work directly for the university. And we should say that what you're reporting may not be suitable for young or sensitive listeners.
That's right. And the first story is about a Jesuit who was accused by at least four young men of sexual abuse back in the 1990s. His name is Father Brad Reynolds. Bishop Accountability has him listed as a priest who's been credibly accused of sexual misconduct. But his name is missing from the Jesuit Order's own list of accused priests. The university's administration hasn't directly answered questions about what they know about predatory priests who have worked on campus. But Father Reynolds lived and worked there off and on from 2006 until the spring of 2019. And 2 years ago, he gave the commencement blessing at Gonzaga.
There are some things you need to leave behind. Mistakes, betrayals, wounds.
Father Reynolds first came to Gonzaga as an artist in residence about 13 years ago. Then in 2012, he was assigned by the Jesuits to work there as a spiritual advisor to students.
In front of you are some of those same things. Mistakes, more betrayals, more wounds, words said, words unsaid. But there's also amazing things in front of you. Miracles, conversions.
Father Reynolds is also a writer. In his series of mystery novels published in the late 1990s, the main character is a Catholic priest. In one, the character's relationship to a young boy is questioned after the boy's body is found badly bruised and violated. Father Reynolds is also an amateur photographer. National Geographic published some of his photos in 1990. He spent years photographing daily life in Alaska's remote Native villages, even though he was never assigned by the Jesuits to work there.
Oh.
Last January, I visited one of those villages way out west on the Bering Sea coast, nestled on a treeless hillside that overlooks an ice-covered bay. All the houses are really colorful, different shades of blue, purple, red, orange, yellow, bright green, different shades of green. And then they each have like little kind of graying sheds behind them. Some are little sweat lodges or like little saunas. Oh, wow, look at the stack of pictures you have. My first stop is with Maggie John, one of the elders. I'm at her kitchen table, and she's brought out a stack of photos to show me. Father Reynolds took all of them, and how did you come to have them?
I found them when I was looking.
Look at that. This one is just little kids playing with airplanes.
I left my glasses up there.
Maggie does the bookkeeping at the Catholic Church here. She's tiny but sharp. Her face is serious, but she has a good sense of humor. There's a TV on in the background. Cartoons for her granddaughter. And you just found these?
Yeah.
Man, that's a beautiful picture. Look at that little girl's hair just flying in the wind. All of these photos were taken by Father Reynolds. Young people in Yupik regalia doing yuruk, the traditional Yupik dance. Little kids playing in the snow. A boat full of men out on the ocean hunting for seals. Maggie knew Father Reynolds, but says she hasn't seen him in more than a decade.
He can't come here.
Oh, he can't come back here?
He can't come back here.
According to who?
After those lawsuits or something.
Oh, okay.
He can't come back here anymore.
In 2008, two Alaska Native boys from here filed a civil lawsuit against Father Reynolds, the Jesuit Order, and Gonzaga University. They allege he sexually abused them back around 1999, when they were 9 and 11 years old. The details in the complaint are graphic. Among other things, it alleges that Father Reynolds masturbated one of the boys. A year after the suit was filed, the Jesuit Order in the Northwest declared bankruptcy, and the case came to a halt. Four years before that lawsuit was filed, Maggie tried to sound the alarm about Father Reynolds' troubling behavior. She did what she thought she was supposed to. She told a parish priest, Father Dave Anderson, what she'd heard, and he wrote a letter to Jesuit leadership back in Portland, Oregon. The letter said Father Reynolds took two young men from the village to Anchorage. He gave them alcohol. I read the letter to Maggie. He then asked one of them to take off their clothes, and he photographed one or both of them when they were naked. This letter also says Father Reynolds photographed a Jesuit student while he was naked. And there's a third allegation about a group of little boys who would come running in and out of the parish office wearing only swimming trunks. Last year, where Brad allowed 3 to 4 boys to take off their clothes and compete in doing pull-ups.
He always had boys in there. Young boys always in there, some wearing only trunks. And before that, I was told, I think by Sister Kathy or somebody, that their young kids weren't supposed to be in here without their parents. I did tell him that, but he never listened.
He never listened, she says. There are no police in this village, and she didn't know what else to do beyond talking to the parish priest. Other people here also tell me kids always visited Father Reynolds when he was in town. He had a game on his computer they liked to play, Deer Hunter. People say Father Reynolds would play the game with two kids at a time in a tiny room with the door locked. According to the court documents, Father Reynolds offered the kids homemade oatmeal cookies. One of the young men who alleges he was photographed naked is in his 50s now, but he still lives here. And so I go to meet him one morning at his office. When I walk in, there's a heater next to the door. It's 20 degrees below zero outside. And there are other people in the office.
When you get a minute, can I speak to you privately?
Okay.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay, cool.
We aren't naming this man or even the village we're in to protect his privacy. I explain why I'm here, and he says he'll think about an interview over the weekend. On Sunday, I go to church. The first Catholic Mass was offered here in 1964. For the next 40 years, at least six credibly accused priests came and went. Even the building they lived in is named for an accused priest. And when those priests got too old, at least two of them retired to Gonzaga University. There is no priest in the village when I visit. So on this particular Sunday, a local deacon says Mass in the native language, Yuchtun. Joe Asulik is also an elder here, and after church, I catch up with him. Joe prefers to speak to me in Yuchtun, so his cousin, the village tribal court administrator, Charlie Moses, translates.
We were raised to give people benefit of the doubt. So where those priests, where they were concerned, we saw them as good people. They served us the way they were supposed to serve us.
The legacy of the Catholic Church in many Alaska Native villages is complicated. In our original reporting, victims' advocates described villages like this as dumping grounds for predatory priests. But people here also credit the church with providing opportunities like education, which they may never have received otherwise.
What we didn't know was what they did behind closed doors where nobody else was watching. Sometimes people turn out to be not what you saw them to be or what you thought them to be.
Despite decades of news stories about the clergy sex abuse scandal and hundreds of lawsuits filed by Alaska Native and American Indian survivors, it doesn't seem to be common knowledge in this village. I ask Charlie what he thinks.
Do you think the community, this is something the community should know more about?
Yeah, in today's world, they should know. The more you know about stuff like this, the more that it's going to be harder. It's still going to happen. I bet you it's still going to happen, but it's not going to be as easy for them to do it.
The man I'd gone to visit before church agreed to talk to me over the phone. We spoke for over an hour, and he confirms the events in that 2004 letter. He told me, I never should have gone on that trip. He says Father Reynolds did photograph him naked and that the experience ruined his life. He became an alcoholic. And over the years, it's been hard for him to talk about this, even with his wife. At one point, he puts her on the phone with me so I can explain what I know. I made sure he knew I wasn't recording the interview because he wants to keep his identity anonymous. He keeps saying my name, Emily, but he tells me no one can know his. This man is one of hundreds of Alaska Natives who filed lawsuits against the Jesuit order in the Northwest in the early 2000s. There were so many lawsuits that by 2009, the order filed for bankruptcy. 2 years later, the order paid out $166 million. It was the fourth largest bankruptcy settlement in Catholic Church history. And Father Reynolds? In 2012, he took a job as Gonzaga's Assistant Director of Mission and Ministry, where he offered spiritual guidance to students and took them on retreats.
Sarge, do I need this guy's picture still?
Some of the settlement money the Jesuits paid out is going to the men who allege abuse by Father Reynolds. That includes someone who spent most of the last year in prison in Anchorage. This man, now 31 years old, had a difficult childhood. He bounced from home to home and spent time in juvenile detention. I wrote him a letter to ask if I could visit, and he said yes. We're protecting his identity because he's an alleged victim of sexual abuse.
I'm in, but My experiences go way back, and you know, sometimes I'm not comfortable to talk about it. Sometimes I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
Because you know, it's been when I was a little kid, so.
Yeah. Well, do you mind if I ask you questions? And if you're like, hey, I'm not comfortable with that, then you can just tell me.
Like, for the record, you're talking about Brad Reynolds on this?
I am, exactly.
So I don't like to hear that name because he took away my childhood.
He tells me Brad Reynolds took away my childhood.
He made me a person that I didn't want to be, you know?
He made me a person I didn't want to be, a violent person, he says.
So I don't know if I want to talk about it and get the flashbacks back or...
He doesn't want to elaborate. The guard in the room and the surveillance cameras on the ceiling make him uneasy. Days later, this man is released on bail. But his criminal history involves a lot of domestic violence, and so tribal leadership back in the village won't let him go home.
So, Emily, how did the Jesuits respond to these allegations against Father Reynolds?
Okay, so after Maggie John first reported Father Reynolds to her parish priest in 2004, the Jesuits sent him for psychological evaluation. A report concludes that Father Reynolds did use some bad judgment, but none of the mistakes constitute abuse. The psychologist recommended short-term counseling. Then, when that lawsuit was filed against him in 2008, the Jesuit spokeswoman tells me he was removed from public ministry and investigated. She says he was placed on a safety plan during that time, but the Jesuits have never provided any details about those plans.
And did you ask them about those settlement payments for all the men who say Father Reynolds abused them?
Yeah, I did ask about that. And the Jesuit spokeswoman said that just because the payments were made, that doesn't mean any abuse occurred. In an email, she said no matter whether a valid defense existed, every claimant received something.
So what they're saying is that the four men are getting money even though they didn't prove their case.
Yes, but plaintiffs' attorneys who worked on these civil lawsuits strongly disagree. They say each and every claim was carefully reviewed, and they also say that it's a federal crime to make a false claim in a bankruptcy case. I've asked the Jesuits to tell me what their review board concluded when they looked into the allegations against Father Reynolds, but they also haven't responded to that.
So where's Father Reynolds now?
Well, we actually don't know for sure. Until last May, he was still living and working at Gonzaga. He's not there anymore, and the Jesuits told me he's been caring for a sick relative and that he's talking to leadership about his next assignment. They've also told me he's in good standing and free to travel anywhere. That includes the village where the abuse is alleged to have happened. We've requested interviews, but both representatives from the Jesuit order and Father Reynolds refused to sit down and talk with us.
So what about Gonzaga?
Well, I learned that the lawsuit filed against Father Reynolds isn't the only one that names Gonzaga. The university has been named in at least four other lawsuits since 2004. They all allege sexual abuse or misconduct by Jesuit priests. In an email I got from University President Faye McCullough, he said they're painfully aware that some accused priests have had connections to Gonzaga. And he said Father Reynolds no longer works at the university.
Thanks, Emily. When we come back, we take a look at another allegation of sexual misconduct and how it could have cost Gonzaga a fortune. That's next on Reveal.
Reveal is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Comparing car insurance rates from multiple insurers so shoppers can evaluate options in one place. Now that's Progressive. Comparisons available at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. And from Noom. Noom is here for people providing information about how we can all stay well, physically, mentally, and emotionally, by offering support and guidance to navigate a healthy lifestyle with new challenges. More at Noom.com.